Blog Talk Radio.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. After a major mishap last Monday night, we are back, we are back, we are back live on Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to another crazy edition of the Absolute Truth Show right here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, with the most, the king of king himself, the man that will take over Cuba in a few months. I am Dictator Hot Rod. And on the phone line, I have the second man who will try to kill me to take power in Cuba. It is
the power-hungry Sean Black, who is in the building. Once again, hopefully everybody had themselves a great Thanksgiving weekend. Well, we had an early holiday break based on technical difficulties. So
Yes. I'd like to apologize for last week. We was about to do a show, but was too busy filming Anisha B sex movies.
Uh-oh.
So there was a little bit of delay in that. So Anisha B choked up on her sex scene, so it took us longer than expected. So,
oh boy.
And because of that, she's not here with us tonight. She had to recover from a deep throat action.
But you know, when she does get back, she's going to kick you right in the throat. And I will record that.
What's she going to do? What's she going to do to me? A 69? Oh! But, ladies and gentlemen, before I forget, this might be our last show of the year. We will try to do one more show because Christmas is around the corner. And all three of us are very busy. Sean and I have major projects ahead. Mm-hmm. So please forgive us. As for Nietzsche B, major bed action ahead.
Uh-oh.
For her. So we might do the show next Monday, and that might be it until. But we shall return back in January with major hot topics beside Donald Trump.
Yeah. I mean, Trump will make himself known. That's not even an issue. It's the other stuff that happens during
yes.
the year.
Yes. We will focus once again on relationship. We will focus on my favorite topic, religion. We will attack all that. And, of course, we have to attack Sean Black, too. But other than
brother.
That, Sean Black, are you ready to somewhat piss people off if there's any more pissing off to do?
Well, hey, it looks like the Grim Reaper finished off everyone else, so we might as well piss off the people the Grim Reaper missed. How about that?
Okay, no problem. Let's go. The number to call in your thoughts or questions or comments is 347-989-8402. Excuse me, I think I need your hand got choked in my throat.
Uh-oh.
347-989-8402.
Yeah, I think that's the real reason why we won't be doing this show. The rest of this year, because the hot rod will be in traction.
Oh, yes. Well, of course, we're going to talk about immigration and the war in a few minutes. But first, over the weekend or last Friday, please forgive me, I did not do my research. I've been very busy this weekend. Sean Black know why.
Mm-hmm.
Family related, besides the holiday weekend. This man quoted, "He will die until America is destroyed."
Yeah.
Donald Trump got elected president, and over the weekend, Fidel Castro finally passed away at the age of 90.
Go figure.
It took Donald Trump to kill Fidel Castro. Go figure.
Oh, boy. Craziness.
All right. So before we go to our dictator, let's talk about the former dictator of Cuba. I think we are. I'm on the road tonight.
Yeah, you got some good segues going in today, you know.
Yeah, Sean Black. Mm-hmm. Everybody know who Fidel is, but like I said, I did not do my research correctly. In your opinion, was he a good dictator? I'm like, I know he did a lot of bad stuff, but overall, because there was some celebration and some mourning for Fidel Castro, but I'm sure everybody had their different opinions on it. What is your opinion about Fidel? Do you think he was a good dictator, a bad dictator, or, you know what, 50-50?
Well, based on the fact that he took over when he took over, he basically came in as like a revolutionary, like Che Guevara, going in and trying to help revolutionized the Cuban nation at the time that he took over. He basically ran Cuba for literally over almost 50 years. He was prime minister from 59 to 76, and then he took over as president from 76 to 2006. And then because he was ill, he stepped down and his brother Raul took over. But basically, he was a Marxist, he was a Leninist, Cuban nationalist. He was under he basically had his administration take over and turn Cuba into a one-party socialist state. They nationalized all of their businesses and then reformed the state into a socialist state and communist state. He basically took the country and made as much as he could out of it for himself, out of poverty, took over as a revolutionary, and then oppressed his people for the entire time he was there. And the problem with that is the fact that if you're a revolutionary and you're supposed to be this guy that's supposed to lead a country or a nation into a new era, and you're basically doing everything that you can to oppress your people, and then do as much as you can to keep that power, which a lot of dictators do, you see all of the things that have happened. I mean, this is a man that was, as a lot of people may not know, he survived 600 assassination attempts as he was the head of Cuba, and as a dictator, you have those kinds of things happen when you are opposed by so many other nations. And it's one of those things that a lot of people look at and wonder, how's the country going to survive with him now that he's out of power? His brother Raul, who was supposed to step down in 2018, I think what we're starting to see now, after all of the years of the communist rule and all of the oppressive regime that Cuba had, I think that we're starting to see some sort of evolution where trade, which was, there was an embargo with the United States and Cuba, and that has been somewhat lifted during the Obama administration to try to get trade back into the country, knowing that this day was coming soon. And I think the people are hopefully looking at something positive from this. The only problem with that is we have now an incoming president who, as on Twitter, which is his favorite thing to do, has said that the Cuban people deserve better, and that Castro is now no longer in power, that we're going to see what happens. But I don't know if he's going to roll back a lot of the things that President Obama has done as far as trade and making sure things happen back and forth between the United States and Cuba. Will that happen? I don't know. That's not to be seen.
But how many assassination attempts happened to Castro?
600 attempts.
Out of 600 attempts, it takes one news about Donald Trump being elected to kill this man?
Yes, go figure. And I think that the defining incident during this whole entire regime, but a lot of people know, is the Cuban Missile Crisis,
yes,
which was part of the Cold War in 1962, which could have actually led to a whole lot of hell in this world. Luckily, it was averted by JFK and a lot of the things that happened during that entire time that led to the Cuban Missile Crisis not actually going off the way it did. Basically, the United States had opposed the government that Castro was running and attempted to remove him by an assassination attempt, and it didn't work, including the Bay of Pigs invasion. That was in 1961, I believe. Through that, Castro actually had formed an alliance with the Soviet Union, and that led to nuclear missiles that were going to potentially be used. They were in Turkey, and then the U.S. actually thought that the threats against Cuba Through that, Castro was actually allowing the Soviets to place the nuclear weapons in Cuba. That's where all of that started from. And it could have gone a heck of a lot worse had it happened. But
we want to ask this because a lot of people have posted some stuff about what they have done for the country.
Mm-hmm.
Like all the good parts, what you have done. The embargo kind of like did help out Cuba a little bit. And also, he did something for Africa, South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he made the doctors create vaccines for cancer. He helped homelessness go down. Child endangerment go down. So he did some good for the country, I'm assuming, right?
Yes. And that's kind of the weird thing about somebody that's quote-unquote perceived as a dictator. But see, here's the thing. The day that it happened, and I looked at all the news when it happened, I've actually learned about Castro passing away from a friend of mine. I was asleep, and he sent me a text. He said that Fidel Castro was gone, and I was like, oh, he passed? And I was asleep. So I turned on to the news channels to see what happened, and there were, especially in Miami, where there are a lot of Cuban immigrants and a lot of Cuban people that have migrated from Cuba that have lived in Miami and in the Florida area and have migrated and have built up lives. They were celebrating and dancing in the streets, waving Cuban flags and cheering, happy that this oppressive person is out of power. So there are a lot of things that have happened that, you know, that the Cuban people are so glad have come to an end. But a lot of people under that regime passed.
Now. So the power has been transferred to a family member for a long time.
Yes.
So, yes, the devil is dead or something like that, but the evilness still continues. And is it good for the country now? The reason why I brought this up because we've been through, we know a lot of countries that had dictatorship for a long time. Iraq, Haiti, Egypt. And when it happened with the dictator's gone, what happened to a certain degree? Most of that country crumbled. Look at Iraq. We got rid of Saddam Hussein, trying to do Iraq a favor. Now Iraq is really effed up. It's like you broke down a house of rats, and all the rats is all over the place, messing up your home.
Exactly.
And nobody don't know what to do. But everybody was afraid of one person and that army, and now everybody's out. And I told people, we all know the divide. My parents are from Haiti. My father hate Jean-Claude Duvalier. He was a Haiti dictator back in the early 80s, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
The reason my father hate Jean-Claude, or a.k.a. Baby Doc, because he killed my grandfather. Stuff from what he told me, I don't know the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
But like I told people, Haiti back then under Baby Doc or Jean-Claude Duvalier, the Haitian dictator, was ruled a lot better the way it is now. Now you have nothing but corruption, time after time after time again. Yes, the dictator back then killed a lot of people, but everything was under control to a certain degree. Yes, freedom was taking away a lot of people, but with less chaos going on. Now you have earthquakes and everything that's happening in Haiti, and you know, money got pumped into Haiti. What has Haiti recovered from? Nothing. Maybe there was a dictator, and maybe if the government was run properly, it could be a different situation, but that's not the case. I think he was a little bit more onward with that, a little bit outgoing than that, but that's the problem with when you have a dictator for a long time, have a country under their regime, and now, oh, the person's dead, yay, and look what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Now you got Iraqis blowing each other up, looking for power.
Yeah.
Do you see that happen to Cuba also?
Or
that's a different metaphor?
See, the thing is, like you just stated, when we hear of regimes being busted up, and it's usually over a long period of time that somebody has taken over a country, a nation, an area that is important to other countries as far as trade or money, oil, whatever the case may be. As far as Cuba went, we know Castro was looked at as a dictator with a totalitarian, iron-fisted rule. those kinds of things. When we talked about Saddam Hussein back in the day, the idea was, although he was an evil dictator, he kind of controlled a certain area, and it didn't get as bad as it is now. But because of what happened with Saddam being overtaken and Muammar Gaddafi being overtaken and eventually taken down from their power, what we've seen now are a lot of splintered groups coming out of that, where you had Al-Qaeda and you have now ISIS or ISIL, depending on who you talk to as far as where their initial investment comes from.
But, Sean, sorry to cut you off. Those two leaders that was mentioned right now,
mm-hmm.
the two leaders, who got rid of them?
Yeah, the U.S.
who
regime, for
them?
The most part, were instrumental in helping get that taken care of.
The United States. Why would the United States stuck our nose into their business?
Man, that's the thing. The question is, for most people, they think, well, there's got to be a higher reason for that. It's not because of necessarily how they treated the people, because in general, although I believe the regime does care about how the people are treated, that is not the number one reason why a lot of that happened, I think.
Do America really care how people get treated? Let's be honest.
On
Look
some level, I think they do. I think it's not the prevailing reason why they do anything, though.
No,
to answer your question.
No, I don't believe America does not care about the way they treat us, black people, Indians. You think they care about other people? If we get treated like crap, too?
Oh, yeah. This country, our country in general, has a long and very sobering history as to how it got to where it got on the backs of a lot of other people, the Native Americans, African Americans, Africans coming over as slaves. It's just a huge history of mistreatment and just disgusting the way things were done, the way lives were looked at. So when you see the United States as a national power helping another country overthrow a dictator and wonder why they're doing it, you always wonder if there's either an ulterior motive or the real reason behind it. And then you usually know that it is, and then you kind of almost accept it for what it is. But we'll probably never know the real true reasons. But I think a lot of people can kind of suspect what a lot of people are saying or what a lot of people are doing and where they come from with a lot of the motivation behind what they do and why they do it and when they do it.
If it's not O-I-L or M-O-N-E, why? Oil or money? America does not care. That's the bottom line. America does not give a damn about the people.
Yeah. And now here's the other thing, as I brought up. President Obama seemed to have, on some level, to the public, really the only politician that seemed to want to try and evolve relations with Cuba from where it's been for the last 50 years to some place where they could mutually, trade, shop. We just recently had our first Major League Baseball game played in Cuba in God knows how many years. We're starting to see people traveling over to Cuba from the United States and able to buy things because you weren't able to import goods from either the United States to Cuba or back from Cuba to the United States. So we were starting to see that evolution with President-elect Trump, who is now taking over in January. We're like literally about little over 50 days away from that transition happening. What is going to happen with that transition where we know that we're going to have a president who has already talked about how many illegal aliens coming from different countries and they don't belong here because of, and what's that going to do going forward to the already infant steps in the relations between Cuba and the United States and where that's going to go?
Okay. Well, we got K-Dog, another Cuban immigrant, in the house.
K-Dog. Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, what's going on?
All right. How do you feel about Fidel Castro?
Well, there's a lot to be said about Fidel Castro, because looking at the way that 1959 revolution changed a lot of things for Cuba, because remember, he overthrew the president who he felt that was oppressing the people, was Batista, mm-hmm. when he came in January of 1959. And he changed Cuba. You know, yes, it became a communist state, but however, with the health care and things that were no longer happening in Cuba, because from what I learned about him was that he was somewhat well-liked by the people, but at the same time,
feared.
He was also hated by many.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As somebody called him, he was a very charismatic devil, is what I've heard people say about him.
Wow. To be honest, before I cut you off, K-Dog, I get that a lot. I don't know why, but I get that all the time. Well, go ahead, K-Dog.
Yeah, there was a lot, because from what my mom told me about back in the days when Fidel Castro first took over, and this was going back, like, even during the days of, well, when Haiti was ruled by Hot Rod, there's one person that you forgot to mention during the dictatorship, Baby Doc's father, Papa Doc, who ruled Haiti from 1957 up to his death in 1971. Now, when my mother first said that she first heard about the revolution in Cuba on radio back then, and a lot of Cubans said, wow, you know, it's a new day in Cuba that Fidel Castro brought in. But, like I said, he was also public enemy number one, especially here in the United States of America, because of his partnership with Russia at the height of the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of that to be said. So I can't say that Fidel Castro was a villain, and I can't say that he was a hero at the same time. But however, one of the things that he did was that he cleaned up Cuba from some Cubans who say that he did. But also, like I said, after that alliance with the Soviet Union, it changed everything. It changed the relationship with Cuba and America,
which led to that
embargo that was imposed back in 1961.
And the interesting part of that whole thing is, because of that embargo, if you ever looked at Cuba, it looks like Cuba was stuck back in the 1960s, because we're now in 2016. And if you look at the way the architecture is, if you look at the way vehicles are, a lot of people are driving like 1950, 1960s cars. You're seeing a lot of the architecture look very similar to the way it did back in those days of like 1960s Miami, because Miami has a lot of influence from Cuba because of a lot of the immigrants from Cuba that migrated to Miami. So they look very similar.
Well, also, let's not forget also what Castro did in 1980 when he opened up the Maribel Harbor and cleaned out his jails and brought them all here to the United States.
Hmm.
Well, that's a good, honestly, a sharp point, but it's like a good thing and a bad thing. You know, I mean, yes, they're a little bit laid back, but I guess I bet you most of them have a better life than we do right now.
Yeah.
Because they eat better, they have better health care, they don't rely on technology, and you know what?
Nope.
The more simple life, the more happy you are sometimes, the way I see it sometimes.
And also, Castro helped the education planning over there, too. They were accompanied by the state control of the press and the internal dissent. See, Castro did a lot of that for Cuba. But, like I said, people look at him as public enemy number one.
And it's all going to depend on what side of the fence you're on. And if you're of that ilk of a lot of people who actually had to leave their families in Cuba because of the oppression that happened and never return and had to stay, let's say they moved somewhere in the United States, like we said before, a lot of them moved to Miami, some moved to other parts of Florida, Texas, other parts a little further up north, but for the most part stationed a lot in the Florida, Miami region. And for those, were never able to return back to Cuba. And a lot of people that moved to the United States, they had family members die or killed while waiting for this regime to change. So if you're looking at for those that stayed in Cuba, maybe life was good for them. But for the ones that had to leave Cuba, as you've seen a lot of baseball players, a lot of athletes leave Cuba to make a better living for themselves, when we're talking about a lot of people in Cuba that were maybe making a dollar a day as far as a salary to feed maybe 8, 9 family members. Lots of maybe some people had lots of children. Maybe they just had a mom and a dad to take care of, and they're not making a whole lot of money to actually migrate, become that were athletes and go over to the United States. They probably looked at it as, you know, it was a simple life, but I'm able to go to the United States and make lots of money and help my family out. So when the time comes, I can come back and bring them back with me. Or maybe I can go back to Cuba when the regime has changed.
I guarantee to you, things will get a little bit better, but it won't change completely. You know, nothing gets done overnight.
Oh, of course.
You know, this is going to take time. Everybody wants change like now. Everybody wants happiness now.
But you can't do it now.
So if Raul not going to fight for power, I guarantee you the next person after Raul will probably do the same crap too, or something different. Power is something most men love. Most men will fight and kill over it. I have to give Fidel credit. I give Fidel credit.
Oh, yes, I do.
All those attempts of not getting killed, he lived to be 90.
My thing is,
and
my
he had
thing
power
is,
for over 50, for almost 50 years.
Yeah. My thing is with Fidel Castro, why I consider him such a strong leader, he stuck to what he believes in. He stuck to it. He didn't change nothing.
Well, you never know.
This is what I do.
You might have Donald Trump next year who might stick to what he believes and build that wall for you. But hold on. Caller, you're on the air. Hello?
Yeah, I called in before. My name's Joe.
Hey, how
Hello,
you doing?
Joe.
Hey, Joe, what's up?
You guys are actually glorifying Fidel Castro?
Yes.
Why?
Because we figured let's give him a little bit. Let's talk about, was he a good guy or a bad guy?
Well, as you were just talking about, all the other co-hosts, if the people had to leave Cuba and get here on cars, I don't think he was much of a good guy. He owned something like 20 luxury houses while his people languished in poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
wow.
So, you know, and Stalin had one. I found this out a few months ago. Stalin was the richest guy in the world. It seems to me like all the people who are head of communist and socialist regimes, they're always proselytizing about Karl Marx's philosophy about how to do good for the majority of people in the land, but they're the ones, the dictators, they're the ones at the top who skim off the top to become billionaires while their people suffer.
Yeah. And that was one of the reasons why I brought up the fact that it depends on what side of the seat you're sitting in. And for there are a lot of people in Cuba that are glad that the regime is dead, as obvious by, as I stated earlier, all the people that were celebrating and waving the Cuban flag and, you know, the devil is dead and all of the other chants that were going on.
Yeah, they were partying in the streets of Miami,
yeah.
Man.
But then at the same time, there are people, for whatever reason, that were kind of romanticizing the fact that he helped some of the Cuban people in some instances. But like I stated also, he did a lot of bad, and he was looked at, I mean, just from the Cuban Missile Crisis itself, that should be enough to let you know what kind of power he was dealing with at the time when he was the head of Cuba.
Yeah.
Well,
so there was a lot of that.
Yeah, well, he was a pawn of Khrushchev at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He allowed Khrushchev to put... Now, here's another conspiracy theory. There's a theory that there weren't missiles in Cuba because the so-called satellite images, they were fed to JFK in such a way that made him believe that there were missiles, but may not have been really missiles.
Yeah, so it was more like a manipulation play almost.
like the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq?
Oh, that's more definitive than...
Yeah.
There were none over there in Iraq. And at the time, I swallowed the Kool-Aid whole, and I said, well, look, you know, if we got to go over there before they come over here, and the president says so, I mean, he must know what he's doing, so let's follow Bush. And then after a while, I started doing my own research, and I started realizing that the government is our enemy. It's not just corrupt, it's our enemy. It is there to oppress the weak, to put down the poor, to imprison those that have dissent. It is like any other regime on the planet, only it's a democratic regime as opposed to a socialist regime or a communist regime. But people don't realize it yet because, you know, we can get into our cars and we can drive around, but we're driving around with GPS on our ass. So, and then, you know, when they're ready, they'll pull the plug, and then everybody will go right down the drain.
Well, that seems to be the fear, as they always say, Big Brother is watching. And if anybody read that book, 1984, by George Orwell, they'll know exactly what we're talking about.
Oh, yeah, that was a big book back then, I'll tell you that.
And
it's still relevant today.
Oh, yeah, it's a great book. It's a harbinger.
Still relevant today.
Sure.
One of the best books written.
I mean, I'm glad I read the book. I talk about doublespeak and talk about how people can actually hold two mutually exclusive ideas in their head, know that they're mutually exclusive, but think that both of them are valid. It really shows how the brain can be really molded, especially when you're young, and you believe all the crap that the government, the public school system, and everybody else teaches you. And then when you start to grow up and have your own experiences and start to question what's going on, it causes a lot of cognitive dissonance.
And that's been going on for many, many years. And a lot of people don't really know how to address it up until recently, because now that everything is on the internet, and I think this is probably the good part about the way society is now, you can kind of almost do your own fact-checking if you know where to look and find the information that you really need, as opposed to what's thrown at you or pumped at you. Because if you remember, is when you go to public school, they tell you everything about European history. They tell you everything about, you know, quote-unquote social studies. But they don't really give you the ideal of what happens, or at least update the things that you're supposed to know, until you can really go and look online and find out what you're looking for.
Yeah, the internet is the greatest information provider and greater information service and greatest service to Americans ever. And
true.
Really,
but at the same time, it is the devil too.
Yeah, it is. I mean, look, when you're online, people don't realize how much information that you can find on the internet. The internet, people look at the internet more than they read books, more than they watch television, as much as you can see. So, you know, yes, Big Brother is watching. The feds are watching what you're looking at.
Of course.
They know exactly.
And not only are they doing it illegally, but they're doing it legally by having Facebook and Google just...
Of course.
Acquire all the data that they can from you, and then you give it to them freely, and then the government just acquires it from them. Now, I heard the rumor, and I don't know if it's true, that Facebook and Google, they were funded by the government, probably for this very reason, so that in time they would grow to really capture people's attention and then get their information from them.
I tell you, man, it's serious.
Well, Big Brother is a great book. I mean, Big Brother is the kind of 1984.
Yeah.
Yeah, by George Orwell. It was written in 1948.
Yeah. So and then the other book, it's a companion book, almost, Aldous Huxley, who wrote Brave New World, So you can choose either one of your poisons. You can either...
Okay, talk about poison. Let's talk about the other dictator, the other poison, Donald Trump, Sean's favorite character.
So, here we go.
How do you feel about this wall that Donald Trump, quote-unquote, wants to build?
I like it.
You like it?
Yeah.
So so basically you're saying that we do have a major immigrant problem.
Yep.
Immigration problem.
I don't like legal or illegal immigrants. We have 94 million people, not just out of work in America, but people who cannot even find jobs. They've just given it up. Then we have about a fifth, if not more, of the remaining households who can't find work. But the government's lying about the unemployment statistics. They say 6%. That's garbage. It's minimum 26% people out of work. Okay, that's better than one out of every four people. So when you have that, then you're saying, come on down, come on into our country. Yeah, enjoy our food, enjoy our water, enjoy our public benefits. People don't seem to realize that it's like physics. Remember when you guys were in high school and they taught you that two objects cannot occupy the same space at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
Well, two people can't have the exact same job at the same time. So if we have 13 million, by a conservative estimate, of illegals here, they're either having somebody's job or they're committing crimes. And the argument that nobody else would do their work, to me, is an extremely fallacious argument.
Oh, okay. Kato, you want to take over?
Well, all I could say is this, is that this country was built on immigration. People came to this country. People invaded this country. They took over the country. You know, you have to look at different, you have to look at the history of this whole, of the whole United States. It was all built by immigrants. So, you know, whenever people come here, the first thing they want to come here is to live out the American dream of working here and living here, making a life for themselves better than what they were living in their own country. That's the thing that people come here to do.
Okay,
Sean?
Everything that you said is true, but it's irrelevant. Because
really?
It's irrelevant. It doesn't matter where my grandparents came from or your grandparents or parents or
great-grandparents. I'm sure your grandparents are immigrants.
Yeah, and it's irrelevant.
Okay, then why do you say that it's illegal? Why do you say that you have a problem with legal immigrants? Because if they are legal, they have a right to be here. Don't they not?
A right, a legal right. But again, if they're here, just like there are 250,000, I think, H-1B visas granted to foreign students who are taking up space in colleges. Americans first, people who are fortunate enough to be born in their own country, should have the first bite of the apple. You don't just throw it away because a bunch of strangers want to come across the border. Trump is right. If you don't have borders, you don't have a nation. Because the people who are coming in today, they don't want to assimilate. They want to get the bennies. The kids may grow up to be Americans, but by the time 20 years from now, who's going to know what the American traditions are going to be?
Well, I agree with you with Joe to a certain degree. I do believe there's a problem right now in this country. But I think at the same time, we do need immigrants in this country to keep the culture going. But America is made up of different cultures, right?
Yeah, but who cares? So what? If you have a nation that's made up, just look, take a look at, you know, remember we talked about socialism and communism a few minutes ago. People always think that, well, you know what, they get it wrong over there. But if we introduce socialism and communism over here, we get it done right. Bullshit. You take a look at England, you take a look at France, you take a look at Germany, and you take a look at the multicultural diversification they have over there. It's splitting apart the countries. This is a brilliant plan by people who are in charge of the globe to invade countries without firing a shot.
Sean?
Yeah, I can definitely understand where you're coming from as far as people getting first dibs or first crack at citizenship or the fruits of the country that you're born in. But see, the problem, I can understand where you're coming from, but the whole ideal behind it, and although a lot of people think it's a bunch of hooey, with the whole idea of immigrants and the way things have happened, but this is basically how our country came to be. Outside, we know about all the tyranny and all of the evil that has happened, that that the country has been built on top of. But in general, let's really be honest, this is how our country came to be, based on the fact that we have immigrants here. And those immigrants became Americans, and those Americans then had children who became native to this country based on the fact that they were born here. So it's like a double-edged sword. It's whether you want, or if you're talking about quote-unquote new immigrants coming in, or you're talking about old immigrants that came here and built families, and now those children and their children's children and so on and so forth, who are now naturalized and have become citizens, are the ones that are going to get that quote-unquote first crack at everything. And that's the hard pill to swallow for a lot of people as far as you're trying to explain that.
Well, Sean, to Joe's defense, I have a friend I love him dearly, and we go at it every time up in New Jersey. The producer knows who I'm talking about. Up in Newark, it's considered a Portuguese Brazilian area, right?
Okay.
In the area, you see nothing but Spanish. And he live in that area. Like, why do people that come to this country learn our language, learn English? Why there's Spanish signs out there, Chinese signs out there? So one day he got drunk and ripped one of the signs down. But like, in every other country, you have to learn their language. Why in America, you come here, they don't have to learn our language. But like you'll say, they get the free stuff. They get the health care, the education. At least learn the language. At least file for papers. You know, try to do things the right way.
Not only that, your partner was talking about naturalized citizens. Yeah, the children, if the children are becoming naturalized citizens, and if they think of themselves as Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Now, right now, it's starting to break apart. But let's go back 10 years, 15, 20 years. If you were born in, if you were, I guess, somebody from Iran, and your kid was born in Washington,
mm-hmm.
and let's say you came from Spain and your kid was born in Florida, and then somebody came from Africa and their kid was born in Texas. They all consider themselves Americans. Okay? They all like apple pie. They all like football. They all like baseball. And they all have their own individual ties, their own individual heritage.
Okay.
But they were all considering themselves Americans with differences and similarities. Now you've got Muslims coming in. You're going to there's a county in I forget what state it is, but the governor is allowing that particular county to rule to have that county's laws be ruled by Sharia law. This is just the beginning. That means they're not going to conform to the Constitution. Not that our corrupt politicians are really conforming to the Constitution, but you know, if you're going to have foreigners come over here and then try to have us assimilate to them as opposed to their assimilating to the country that's offering them safety and security, the country's going to break apart. Not because of Trump. There is nothing that Trump said that was racist. I've asked people, tell me what Trump has said that was definitively racist. Nobody can. Now they can talk about his accusing the Mexican judge of being biased, but if a black person in Alabama knew that the guy who was going to try him for an accusation of, let's say, armed robbery was a member of the KKK, he'd have a few doubts about the partiality of the judge. When Trump was talking about building the wall and leaving Mexicans out, this guy has a very, you know, there's nothing wrong with being Mexican, but you can't deny the fact that the guy who has a Mexican heritage, who is a judge, may have bias towards the guy that wants to build the wall to keep out Mexican immigrants.
But basically, do you think this wall will work overall?
I don't think he's going to build it. I think it's going to be too expensive. But I hope I would like for him to build it. But he says he's going to build the fence. We need to keep immigrants from crossing the Rio Grande to come over here. They don't want to speak English. They don't care about American values. As a matter of fact, if they're crossing the border to go into Arizona, New Mexico, and California, now I'm sure you guys have, for now it's died down, but haven't you guys heard about that movement, El Raza or some crap like that?
Mm-hmm.
They want to take New Mexico, Arizona, and California, and they want to cede it back to Mexico. Now, how's that going to help them or the American nation if you're going to have a battle between people who are immigrants who want to say, well, you know what, you stole this land from us, now we want to steal it back from you?
We all know that's not going to happen. Unless there's a war going on.
That's the whole thing. There could be a war brewing.
But, Joe, at the same time, immigrants work for very cheap labor. They're doing the jobs that we don't care for, that we don't want to do. Because, let's be honest, none of us don't want to work for $5,000.
Oh, of course not. Wait a minute. You're an American. Do you want you, your neighbor, your friends to work for less than the minimum wage?
Of course not.
Of course. So if you're saying Americans get a decent wage,
well, the immigrants are really are willing to work whatever, because they're like, hey, I gotta survive here too. So they're gonna take whatever job there is. If it's $5 an hour, they'll take it.
Yeah, they'll take it, but they're also using up space, water, toilet facilities, food,
shower water. Well, the United States is a big country, and you know they Well, you know what? America is the melting pot. Listen, whether you like immigrants or not, immigrants are free to come here legally. I do agree, legally, you should come here. You should.
No, you shouldn't come here. No.
Why shouldn't they?
Because
shouldn't
America
they?
Should be for Americans. Right
well,
now, we're in an economic
like
state.
Like I said, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Are your parents immigrants?
Yeah, and if they were to come over here now, they were lucky. But if they were to come over here now, there would be a special burden on the economy of the United States.
Well, that doesn't say your blood is 100% American, does it?
Of course I'm 100% American, because I was born here and I was raised with traditional American values. But again, the point I'm trying to get across is this.
That's good for you. That's good for you.
It should be good for everybody
good for
if you think of yourself as American.
It's good for everybody. It's good for... Yes, I do consider myself American and very proud of it. But,
today's economy, you can't afford to have people coming over here and taking jobs away from people who want to have jobs, but you can't have it both ways. You can't say you're American and you should work
here,
$15 an hour.
Well,
but,
people come here and they want to work $5 an hour. Let them do it. Hey, this is the American way, huh?
Well, you also have to remember, and this is something that a lot of people, either it's something that they don't want to touch, or it's something that they want to, depending on what side of the fence they're on. But the majority of the last few decades of this country, going back into hundreds of years, that's pretty much what the country's been built on. Now, whether anybody agrees with the ideal behind having immigrants come to the country, in what capacity, how often, where, when, why, that's a different story. But coming at least from the onset, the ideal was that if you were coming from another country, you had the freedom to come to the United States and be able to make a living and do the things that you had and fall under those freedoms that are protected or afforded to people that are here. And I think your assertion is it should be of people that are already here. And the issue is that the whole ideal behind the country is built on the backs of people that have come here, so that there wouldn't be a you, me, K-Dog, Hot Rod, or anyone else if nobody came from wherever they were originally from, came to this country, and then made themselves into who they are and were able to make their family and bring them through and become citizens through naturally or legally. And I think that a lot of people want to adjust that issue. But to just say that nobody should be able to come to the United States, I just personally don't feel that that should be the right thing to do.
It is not the right of anybody to come to the United States. It's a privilege.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the right. They don't come over here simply because God said, well, you have the right to cross the borders of the United States. You cannot cross the borders of any other country
mm-hmm.
and just sit your ass down in that country and say, I'm a citizen now. Feed me.
Okay. We have Milton X on the line now. Milton X.
Good evening. Good evening. Good evening.
Good evening. Oh, and by the way, Milton X, a very happy birthday to you.
Yeah, yes, happy birthday, brother.
Thank you.
Hey, happy birthday,
Milton. Okay, we got 7 minutes. Go ahead, Milton X.
Well, listen. This whole immigrant thing is just, you know, a red herring, in my opinion. Because, one, you're not going to stop immigrants from coming over here unless you stop hiring them. They don't come over here for apple pie and Americana. They come to make money. And as long as they're willing to work for poor wages and no health care or any type of, because even with a little bit of money here, it's a lot of money over there, if you get what I'm saying.
So, you're saying they are taking our jobs away?
Well, in a sense, listen, it's business. Why would I pay minimum wage or regular wages to Americans when I can do for $2 a day or $3 a day for some immigrants? Whatever country they come from.
And for some places, some of those immigrants get paid more doing that $2 to $3 job than they probably ever did where they came from.
Yeah,
exactly.
They make more money than they did back home. That's the whole thing.
So
but then
they
get forget the $2 an hour.
They're not going to stop them from doing it. So
well, they're not over here to make a much better life. They're over here for the bennies. If they come over here and they're earning $5 an hour, who can survive on $5 an hour? You can't. So while they're working off the books, they're also collecting welfare. So they're here for the bennies.
Hey, you know what?
Yeah,
hold on. To Joe's argument, I have a lot of people that complain to me that, yes, they work two jobs and collecting welfare at the same time. So they are taking money to some degree, most Mexicans. And they get paid off the books.
It's all immigrants. They're gaming the system. They come
but
they can't speak the language.
Let's
be honest
about welfare. Most welfare people are regular white Americans, to be honest about it.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the statistics, it's not immigrants on welfare. It's white people.
I think it's 75% of people.
Welfare is a nanny state. Nobody should be on welfare the way that the government's administering it. Years ago, you didn't have welfare. You had charities. Charities were there to help you out, and you had shame. So that was an incentive so that people would actually get a job so that
you did way back in the day, it wasn't welfare, you know, it was slavery and shit. That's how America got it.
Look,
that's talking about 150 years ago.
And not really
150 years ago, but then went to Jim Crow laws and things of that nature.
Then that was 50 years ago.
And we went from welfare and went from there till now. You understand? So things always degrade from one. Things change from one thing to another.
Let's stop being on welfare and start doing your thing and start getting a job.
Well,
if you don't like
You know what's sad? Some people that were born here in America are milking the welfare.
Absolutely, that's what I just said. They're gaming the system. The immigrants and the natural-born Americans are gaming the system, which means they're stealing from me to pay their particular...
Well, the system is gaming them as well, if you want to be honest about it. Because you want to talk about welfare. When these major corporations
should never have gotten a bailout.
They get billions and billions of them.
Of course, they shouldn't have gotten it.
That's capitalism. That's how America works.
That's the American way.
That's the American way.
It's the American way,
crony capitalism. That's how, listen, it's always been cronyism.
Mm-hmm.
That's how America was built.
America was built on genocide.
Actually, America was built on white supremacy, if you want to be honest about it.
Right.
And that's how it starts.
Mm-hmm.
white supremacy, genocide, colonialism. They're all intertwined with each other.
Yeah, but what do you think?
So now, you say that we're trying to kill all the Mexicans now? Isn't that on the list to kill?
No, there's plenty of people to kill. Do you know what the number one cause of death is in the world?
Drinking?
No. Keep on going. You won't get it.
Not heart attacks.
No. It's not illness.
No. Education?
And that's the number one killer of the mind. But physically, let me give you the answer. You would think it's either would be an illness, right? Some kind of plague, or it would be war. It's not either one of them. It's a situation that's called democide. It is one's own government killing one's own citizens. Like what Stalin did to his people, what Hitler did to his people, what Pol Pot did to his people, and what other dictators do to their people, and what's happening now in America from our government doing it to us via the slow kill. Democide. All governments want to kill and or control their citizens, even democratic governments. That's because governments attract psychopaths who want power. And until the American people in particular wake up, and the signs are there. It's not here in America. You know, you take a look at Germany, France, and England, and you find out what's happening to those countries. It's going to happen over here. But people think it's not going to happen because, hey, look, it's America. America's such a wealthy nation. If we're such a wealthy nation, how come we're $15 trillion in debt?
And the only reason we're the only
China, all that money.
We're the only countries in the world that is still able to operate with such a huge debt because we're the only country that can create our own money. And when you're able to create your own money, and still
you're partially right. Now, we're not all countries create their own money.
Well, yeah, but they're able to print it and bring it out and continue to keep it solvent while in all this debt.
Okay,
and other countries can't really do
it. So the reason why America, that's because we are the gold reserve of the world.
I'm sorry, guys, but it looks like we have to continue this conversation again next Monday night.
Hey, Bridget,
where's
your female co-host? I miss her.
she was out working tonight. She was working late tonight. So that's why it's a guys' night only. But tune in next week. We will continue this conversation, I promise. Joe, Lucidus, and K-Dog, as always, guys, thank you so much for making this show.
Sure.
Hey, you're welcome, man.
Yes, thanks a lot.
Right. Happy birthday. Till next time.
Thank you.
All right. Peace out.
All right, Sean, you got a minute. What do you need to say?
Well, the only thing I have to say is I hope everybody thoroughly enjoyed their holiday. Hopefully they made sure that it was peaceful. You know, I celebrated, but Thanksgiving was my grandmother's birthday. She turned 91, so happy birthday to her. And I hope you were able to enjoy yours.
Yeah, a little bit. But it was my son's birthday, so we had like a 4-day festival. You know, the Prince style, of course, as you witnessed yesterday. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to another crazy edition of the Absolute Truth Show. Right here on Blog Talk Radio, I'm your host with the most, the King of King himself, with the one and only
Sean Black and Anitra
and
B. Somewhere listening to us somewhere.
Yeah, she's on her bed right now. And Sean, I'm on the internet right now. I'm only a nice size dildo. What size do you want again?
Oh Lord.
Oh. Well, once again,
get it.
You have no words, do you?
I have no words, but then again, neither does anyone else.
No, we will try to do a show again next week. And Sean Black, this topic will be continuation. Seem like we have a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
And we didn't touch anything yet, really,
about this
topic. All right, so we got topics already for next Monday night. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, thank you all. Have a good night, and trying to stay alive, I guess.
Let's hope so. Remember, the pleasure was all yours.
Yours indeed. So, Sean, hurry up. What size do you want on your dildo?
Why, you son of a...
Oh, gotta go.